You are listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show. I'm Darren, and RJ is in Toronto. Joining us on today's episode will be Dr. Marilyn Jolyneau, and this will be our final episode for the season. And if you remember back in Season 1, we also had Marilyn join us for the last episode. So this is kind of I guess we're starting a tradition with that now. So while it might be Episode 10 of Season 2, we'd kind of like to think of this as Episode 1 of Between Two Globes. So normally, RJ and I would be catching up on some of the things that we've done over the past number of weeks. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit about trees. As we record this, I was participating in the City of St. Catharines free tree giveaway. There are two tree giveaways every year. One happens in June, and the other one happens in October. And the trees that were given away this year happen to be Eastern Redbud, Bitternut Hickory, Tulip Tree, and Sweet Gum. And by far the most popular trees this year were the Eastern Redbud, because apparently these trees in the springtime are absolutely beautiful. And I also wanted to talk about a project in Niagara called Trio Code Niagara. So Trio Code Niagara is a project that seeks to crowdsource information about the urban forest canopy. Most recently, the City of St. Catharines has become a partner or a member of Trio Code Niagara, and the municipal inventory has been added to the database. And the information that is generated from this data includes such things as the amount of kilowatt hours in energy conservation, the amount of stormwater that's mitigated, the amount of air pollution that is taken out of the atmosphere, the amount of CO2 that's taken out of the atmosphere, and the amount of carbon that is actually sequestered as the biomass of the tree. So within the database, there are over 46,000 trees that provide the following benefits to the City of St. Catharines and Niagara as a region. Over 40.5 million kilowatt hours per year in energy conservation. That is the equivalent of the yearly energy consumption for 3,410 homes. Also, over 240 million liters of stormwater is filtered, and that is the equivalent of 96 Olympic-sized swimming pools. There is over 8.4 million kilograms of CO2 removed yearly, and this is the equivalent to the weight of 1,693 elephants, based on an elephant weighing about 5,000 kilograms. The amount of carbon that is sequestered as biomass in the inventory so far is over 36 million kilograms, and that is the equivalent to the weight of about 260 blue whales, based on a blue whale weighing about 140,000 kilograms. And finally, about 36,000 kilograms of other particulate matter that is removed from the atmosphere. And this would include chemicals such as nitrogen dioxide or sulfur dioxide or other particulate matter that's suspended in the atmosphere. All totaled, the benefits that these trees provide to our community equal about $2.7 million per year in eco-benefits. 38.8% of those benefits are provided by a single species of tree, and that tree is the Norway maple. Now, some of you might be familiar with the emerald ash borer, and if you're not, I will include information about that in the show notes. But you may be driving around St. Catharines on your bike or in your car to and from work or going about your day, and you're noticing that there are an awful lot of dead-looking trees out there. Well, that is the emerald ash borer that has caused that. And the challenge lies in what happens when we plant vast amounts of the same species of tree in a particular neighborhood. Well, if there's an outbreak of anything that affects that tree, that entire neighborhood will be decimated. So the importance of biodiversity within our urban forest canopy is incredibly huge. And the two main reasons for increasing the biodiversity within a neighborhood is if there is a particular disease that is hitting a particular species of tree, if you have a wide number of trees of different species in a neighborhood, it might mitigate the spread of that disease. And the other benefit, if you want to call it that, is that if a particular species of tree does need to be removed from a neighborhood, you're not removing an entire neighborhood's canopy. And this might actually have a little bit of cost benefit as well, as you're not replacing an entire neighborhood's worth of trees. And you can selectively plant trees as those gaps occur and improve the biodiversity of the neighborhood along the way. So let's get back to Tree Code Niagara. Those 46,000 trees that are currently in the inventory represent about 20% of the entire municipal canopy. So that means the other 80% are in areas such as ravines or little woodlots, but the vast majority of that 80% would be on private property. And it's the goal of Tree Code Niagara to encourage the participation of the residents of City of St. Catharines and all of the region for that matter to share information about the trees on their property. That way we can get a nice representative picture of the biodiversity of our canopy, but also just imagine what the value in equal benefits that all of the trees in Niagara provide to our community. To learn more about Tree Code Niagara, you can find them on Facebook, you can find them on Twitter, at TreoCoder, that's TreoCoder, or you can visit TreoCodeNiagara.com, that's TreoCodeNiagara.com. And in the upper right-hand corner of that website, you will see a little button that says Share Tree Data. And that will take you to the interactive web map of the current inventory for the City of St. Catharines. There is a little area there where you can enter your address, and if you have a municipal tree in the front of your property, you can see what that tree provides you in eco benefits every year. And now without further ado, our interview with Dr. Marilyn Jolyneau, Associate Professor in the Geography and Tourism Studies Department at Brock University. She is also a member of the Environmental Sustainability Research Center, and she is the Graduate Program Director of Sustainability Science and Society. So at this point in time, I'd like to welcome Dr. Marilyn Jolyneau back to the GeoNiagara Radio Show. As you know, or if you're an avid listener, you will know that she joined us on the final episode for Season 1, and now she's joining us for the final episode of Season 2. So it seems like we're putting together kind of a trend here. Maybe it's the official episode of Between Two Globes.
Potentially.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So when you were with us last time, we discussed your educational path and the like and some of your research. Near the end of that, when this episode aired last year, the final episode, you were just about to head on sabbatical. So I wanted to ask you, how is your sabbatical? It's kind of like a what did I do on my summer vacation question.
Which is a great question. For those who might not be familiar with what a sabbatical is, it's an opportunity for professors to take a bit of a break every so often to really immerse themselves in their research while not engaging in other activities typical of professors like teaching. So a sabbatical can be a half year or a full year, depending on how long it's been since your last one. Typically, it's every 7 years that you take this break, if you will. It's not really a vacation, a summer vacation, but rather an opportunity, as I mentioned, to engage in largely in research. And I found that opportunity to be really wonderful. It's been a long time since my last sabbatical, and you take quite a bit of time ahead of it to really plan out what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. And I would say I've accomplished most of what I wanted to do. So I largely carried on with some existing research projects, worked on the typical kinds of things professors do, like working on writing manuscripts for publication, but also engaged with community in ways I haven't yet done in the past, and in ways that you can do when you have a bit of freedom in your schedule. So that included starting to collaborate with other faculty, which I do already, but looking at outside partnerships and how we could develop those into meaningful, sort of longer lasting relationships.
So we're going to talk about some of those longer lasting relationships and other projects in a few minutes. For your research portion of your sabbatical, what were some of the things that you were researching?
Good question. So some of the things that I was researching was actually looking at stewardship, environmental stewardship initiatives, which is a new area of research for me, and doing a little bit of background research on how do we actually measure ecological outcomes from stewardship initiatives. And that work has been done through a collaboration with Dr. Julia Baird, a Canada research chair that's new to the Environmental Sustainability Research Center at Brock, and with Dr. Ryan Plummer, who's actually the director of what we call the ESSERC. And that work involved quite a bit of literature background, looking at some of the ways that we can quantitatively measure outcomes. So think about geospatial technologies like remote sensing, and how can we use it to maybe monitor change in vegetation growth over time? For, let's say, looking at bird habitat or looking at wetland ecosystems would be an example. I also looked at researching quite extensively this notion of a living lab. And you might be aware that Brock has this collaborative partnership now with the town of Lincoln, and it's referred to as the Brock Lincoln Living Lab. And again, that's been an initiative that I came into under the leadership, again, of Dr. Ryan Plummer. And he'd done quite a bit of work with various senior administrators at Brock and with the CAO at the town of Lincoln, which is Mike Kirkopoulos. And so I came into that after it had already been established a little bit and have been contributing to that initiative.
Can you tell us a little bit about that Brock Living Lab? When did it start? And maybe what kinds of projects and research is being done?
Yeah, there's a lot to say about the Brock Lincoln Living Lab. It came out of some work starting in early 2017, I believe, serious discussions started taking place between Brock and the town of Lincoln. And Dr. Ryan Plummer was coordinating those discussions that eventually led to an official launch event of the Brock Lincoln Living Lab in October 2017. And we brought together folks from the town of Lincoln, students, grad students primarily in the Sustainability Science and Society program through the ESSERC, and some other partners. And we officially acknowledged the launch of that lab. And living labs are really unique entities that go by so many different definitions, but essentially it's bringing together the resources and capacities of the town and of Brock, and combining those two and various actors that play within that, from students and faculty to, you know, the mayor of the town of Lincoln, all getting involved together in a sort of user-centered innovation ecosystem. There's a lot of jargon around it, but essentially you're bringing together, you know, research and what's happening on the ground live. And so you're bringing the classroom into the town, and you're bringing the town into the classroom. And that's been done through independent research projects to formal co-op placements with the town of Lincoln for students in the Sustainability Science and Society program, or the SAS graduate program at Brock.
Before we talk a little bit more about that program, are there plans to expand the Living Lab concept to other municipalities in Niagara?
Another great question, Darren. At present, we have this memorandum of understanding with the town of Lincoln. And so we're at the moment pooling our resources together to work with them specifically. And that's over the next 5 years. So in these early days of developing what that lab looks like, we're focusing on really the needs of the town of Lincoln and helping them to realize their goals around sustainable community development. So we don't yet have plans, although I understand there may be other municipalities that are interested in what we're doing. I also think it's got some interesting connections with our application to smart cities. So I find that really fascinating. So at the moment, we're focusing our energy on the town of Lincoln. And we've been quite successful at getting quite a bit of information that we can use to help us move toward their goals.
I can see a lot of the municipalities in the region just sort of biding their time to see how everything pans out in terms of what research is done and like the outcomes of that research before they all jump in with 2 feet to the entire concept.
Yes, I would imagine they would be watching. And we've taken, and the Environmental Sustainability Research Center, Brock, various senior administrators, as well as folks at the town of Lincoln, we've worked really hard to think carefully about how we move forward, using examples of other communities and other living labs. And what are some of the best practices that have come out of that to look at, you know, asset mapping? What are the existing assets that Lincoln has? What are their needs? So conducting a needs assessment. These are quite early days yet, but I think others will be watching. I think it'll be a unique opportunity for Niagara. And again, it's really fortunate for us that the town of Lincoln is so proactive and so eager to be involved. In fact, one of the things I did on my sabbatical, which I never normally have the opportunity to do, is to present to town council, the committee of the whole. And I did that presentation back in January. And the councillors were incredibly helpful in making that experience an enjoyable one, where I went and basically laid out, you know, what is a living lab? What does it look like? Why do we want that for our partnership? And what they thought about that as well. And we're all on the same page, which is great. They're interested in learning more through research that's mobilized and applied in community contexts, and we're interested in engaging in research, but also, of course, in giving our students a really great experience, right, outside of the bounds of a classroom. And I would say the kind of funny part about a living lab is that it's not a lab at all, right? It can be all kinds of different spaces. It's bound by geography, which, of course, you and I love. So it typically has a spatial extent where that lab is kind of evolving, if you will, over time. But it's not the typical science lab that you might think of. It's very much applied work that we're doing.
So we've established that you were involved with Brock's Environmental Sustainability Research Center. For the listening audience that might not be familiar with this part of Brock University, could you tell us what the ESRC is?
Absolutely. So ESRC is an acronym that stands for the Environmental Sustainability Research Center. And the emphasis there I want to place is on research. So typical departments or units at Brock are involved extensively with, of course, research, but also with teaching, and professors are part of that department. And there's definitely research that goes on there. What's different about the center is that it was initially established with the focus on primarily research. So it brought together faculty from across campus. And in fact, we have members that are from applied health science faculty all the way to math and science and the social sciences and humanities, right, and education. So, you know, we cover pretty much every faculty, and it brings together those researchers in a way that allows us to really look at the environmental sustainability challenges that we face today from many different perspectives. And the sort of idea behind that is that we can better find solutions to problems that we're faced with today, climate change, water pollution as examples, by bringing together these different disciplines, if you will. So we're actually transdisciplinary. We transcend discipline, boundaries, and instead come together and try to talk through solutions by having faculty that, you know, have a background in political science and economics and human geography, physical geography, geospatial technology, psychology, biology. So it provides an opportunity to engage in the kind of research that's really cutting edge. And I think that's seen increasingly as really valuable when we're trying to address really complex issues, like, for example, water resources.
I was fortunate enough to play a very small role in the development of an online module about geospatial technologies. Is this course now available, or a module now available? And do we know how many have participated in it so far?
Yes, and first and foremost, I want to thank you for bringing your expertise to that online module, given that you're basically the person who established the not-for-profit Geospatial Niagara here in the region. It was great to have you on board in developing that module. That module is now part of a larger course that's offered through eCampus Ontario, and it was that initiative that provided the funds through the government to help us at Brock establish this course content. So we receive funding from the government, and then we were able to put together a course that now exists as a course online for anyone to take. So it's an open course in environmental sustainability, basically in practice, right? And it also exists as an environmental sustainability course at Brock. We offer a minor in sustainability now through the ESSERC. And that course is titled NSU 2PO2. And so that course is just running this winter for the first time. I think it had about 100 registrants, and now the spring summer offering, I believe, has about 115 registered in the course. So there's essentially two courses running in tandem, if you will, one that students can actually get credit for, and it contributes to a minor in sustainability, or the other where, you know, you could take the course or someone like you with an interest in environmental sustainability and in practice. How do we achieve environmental sustainability? One way to do that is to look at using geospatial technologies for that purpose.
So I've noticed online that the Environmental Sustainability Research Center has created their strategic plan for 2018 to 2023. Can you describe what the major objectives are of the strategic plan?
Yes, absolutely. The ESSERC has basically put together a strategic plan for the next 5 years, and it's guided by these three objectives. So the first objective is to facilitate research excellence. So that facilitation means that we're either involved in writing of major research grants, say to Tri-Council like SHRC or NSERC grants, to having internal grants that people can apply to, right? So the idea is that we want to facilitate, enhance research excellence, and however we can do that, and have faculty and others engage in that research. We also want to enrich the educational experiences of students through experiential learning, as an example. That's co-op placements often, but of course also can happen in independent projects and in coursework. So we actually, in the course that ran this past winter, it's a grad level sustainability science and society course called Problem Solving in the Environment. SAS 5PO3 is the kind of course code. But we had students work as a team with the town of Lincoln. So those were early days of having the students meet with folks from the town of Lincoln, meet with the instructor of the course, as well as myself and Dr. Ryan Plummer representing the ESSERC. And we are quite familiar with the Lincoln Lab. So to get the students really understanding what a living lab actually is, and then have them have that experience of working with people outside of Brock And two of the students that were in that course are currently in co-op positions with the town of Lincoln. So there's a progression of experiences here that goes from a classroom environment to then going out to the town of Lincoln and then formally spending some time out in the town of Lincoln, where they're, you know, out doing field work, they're in the office as well, they're meeting other people. And one of our co-op students last year, Megan Burbeck, who actually got co-op student of the year, is now employed again with the town. So, you know, they've invested time and energy in training of students, and then that comes back to them because now they can then really work with these students that become employees.
I would imagine there could be some trepidation in terms of students working for the municipality and getting valuable information out of their experience, because sometimes students don't get a fair shake in terms of what they bring to the table in terms of experience through their education.
I mentioned the town of Lincoln is very proactive. So the mayor recently had a luncheon and she knew of these students, so she actually invited them. They've very much been made a part to feel like they're really genuinely embedded in the town of Lincoln, that they're working there. And the people that are directly working with the students, I think of Carrie Beatty and Mike Kirkopoulos, for example, is also well aware of what's going on with those students. They're very much tasked with, you know, real life experience, you know, real tasks that they need to complete and figure out how they're going to go through that process, which is really interesting. So they get all kinds of different skills and training in that experience. And then we also work with them on the Brock side. So we guide the work that they're doing together with the town. And it's a learning experience for all of us, which is a really rich experience. Our last objective, I mentioned two already, one involving research, the other is involving teaching, but also in community engagement. And I think the Brock Lincoln Living Lab is an excellent example of that. But we have also now established a memorandum of understanding with Niagara Parks Commission, and that's producing all kinds of fruitful experiences for our grad students as well. Some are out already doing a lot of field research, working again with folks at NPC. Corey Burrant, for example, program manager of Forest Health, he's been really active and engaged and involved in that work. And we have plans for field season this summer. We will look at again stewardship initiatives that they've identified, and we're looking at measuring, or part of that and part of what I'm involved with is quantitative measures of ecological outcomes from those initiatives. But we'll also be looking at perspectives and what's the perspective from different stewards on outcomes. So there's all kinds of projects happening right now in Lincoln with Niagara Parks Commission, Niagara River Remedial Action Plan folks as well, Natalie Green. We are part of a public advisory committee. So we've been really engaging with multiple actors in the Niagara region.
If the NPC is doing stuff with trees, earlier in this episode, before the interview started, I was talking about the tree giveaway that St. Catharines did a couple Saturdays ago and the importance of that to the biodiversity of our urban forest canopy. Will that be something that they're gathering information on for the Niagara Parks Commission's urban canopy as well?
So I am aware that they are very much interested in the forest canopy. I don't know what specific projects they're involved with right now. I will in the months ahead as we... This is a newer partnership that's just been signed a few months ago, this MOU. And the students have existing projects already. But Dr. Plummer, Dr. Baird, and I have already talked a little bit about different research projects. In fact, we just had a meeting the other day. And one of those is talking about these ways to measure outcomes. And I'm very much interested in vegetation And so looking at regrowth, et cetera, would be something that's of interest to me. And I know that we've acquired now some satellite imagery over the area, and we have plans to acquire some drone data, so some remote sensing data very close to the ground. And I can imagine that there could be some collaboration around looking at, the urban canopy, absolutely.
It seems that all of these initiatives that Brock and the Environmental Sustainability Research Center has with the municipality and with the Niagara Parks Commission, it just seems that everybody benefits. And the people who are working with the students learn just as much as the students do, but sort of in an opposite direction. I think when it sort of combats that sort of perception that studies are done, but then they just sit up on a shelf somewhere and that they're never actually utilized, this seems to be a way that people can see the work that's being done, and it's being promoted in a way that is very forthcoming and transparent in a way. People see exactly what their money might be being spent on in terms of the outcomes of the various different projects.
I agree 100%. You're making me think of a quote from Mike Kirkopoulos, the CAO at the Town of Lincoln, who said he really does not want this to be a one-off study where the results end up published and put on a shelf somewhere. That's not the intention. And I agree wholeheartedly. In fact, part of that community engagement piece is not just in person or going out into the community. We're also doing that online. So we've now got a sustainability blog that students have contributed to, graduate students in particular, different videos. If you actually visit the ESSERC webpage, brocku.ca/ESRC, there's ongoing research projects that are posted there. And you can find the many and varied ways that we connect and engage online through social media outlets, through, of course, our website, where a lot of what we're doing with the Town of Lincoln, with NPC, it can be found there. We really believe in being transparent and people knowing, you know, what we're doing and where the money's going, and that we welcome the community to be part of the work that we do. So we're also looking at citizen science. You'll be familiar with that, and participatory approaches to our research. And we believe in those synergies, right? That students, we learn from our students. The students also learn from being out in the community. And there's a nice kind of positive loop that comes back to us. We really believe in mobilizing knowledge. And actually, sustainability science is all about taking research and putting it into action.
You mentioned smart cities. Is the ESRC part of that application process?
To my knowledge, the ESRC specifically wasn't part of that application per se, but we very much see ourselves doing some of the work that's described there within a municipality, for example. I think about Town of Lincoln as an example of that. What I found really interesting when I read through the application was that we also share, as a living lab, we share an interest in being inclusive. So an important part of that application for Smart Cities Niagara was this notion of belonging. And Mayor Sandra Easton, the Town of Lincoln, has talked quite a bit about the importance of belonging. And we've had discussions recently with a few different individuals in the region where belonging has become really important. So when that Brock Lincoln Living Lab sign went up outside of the headquarters for the Town of Lincoln and it said home of the Brock Lincoln Living Lab, I thought that was a great way to describe what we want it to be. Right? That it's a home. In other words, it has some sort of sense of belonging for people, as home tends to, right? And that we want it to be a place where people feel very much included, voices are heard, and people come together to, again, solve really complex problems, to change or at least direct decision-making, policy development, and to essentially achieve environmental sustainability.
So the ESRC stresses the transdisciplinary nature of the programs. And when you think of sustainability, you automatically think of environment or geography or environmental science, but it goes far beyond those disciplines. What is the most diverse mashup, as it were, with respect to sustainability and other disciplines that you've seen?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, one of the sort of more recent interests we've had, of course, is in looking at health and how environment and health are very much integrated, human well-being, right, in particular, not just the health of the environment, thinking of the forest canopy, but also, of course, human health, human well-being, this connection between humans and nature, being a part of that. I haven't seen too many bizarre connections per se, but maybe because I see how, you know, science, social science, humanities, arts, education, maybe it's because I see how clearly those can all come together around looking at a problem that I don't know that I see any bizarre sort of mashups. But I'm going to keep my eye open now for those.
Last day of June marks your last day of sabbatical and you're returning to Brock on the 1st of July. What are you looking forward to?
Well, first I'll be celebrating Canada Day. Fortunately, we'll be off on July 1. That's wonderful. But what I'm most looking forward to, I guess, would be to resume my position as the Sustainability Science and Society Graduate Program Director, or GPD. I have played a role as the GPD of that program in the past to cover a sabbatical leave of my colleague, Dr. Ryan Plummer. And so I'm eager to return to that position because, of course, we have new incoming students. We have some existing students that I've been working with in the last over the last year. And it's a really great opportunity to kind of think about new research projects. We have all of these initiatives we're involved with at present that lend themselves nicely to the research interests and background of the students that are coming into the program. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to working with a new colleague, Dr. Jessica Blythe, and with existing colleagues like Julia Baird, who's the Canada Research Chair in the ESRC. And getting back to what I'm used to doing and eventually getting back into the classroom as well will be a nice change of pace. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I want to just say that, a lot of the work that we do, there's quite a few staff members behind that work that don't often get acknowledged. So I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the coordinator of projects and programs in the ESRC, and that's Amanda Smits, who is really instrumental in looking at, helping our graduate students navigate Brock system from the time they're admitted all the way, and even before they're admitted, all the way through to graduation. And not only that, they very much share an interest in the initiatives that we're pursuing at Brock. So actually, there's an initiative that we're working on that actually Amanda is largely working on with facilities management at Brock, where they're really looking at sustainability across the campus in terms of waste reduction, et cetera. There's students involved in that. Those students have also been part of a community garden that we've planted. We're one of several groups that have planted a community garden outside of Teal House, where we're housed. And she's been really an excellent resource and has educational background that lends itself nicely to being the coordinator of projects and programs. And on top of that, she's an absolute delight to work with. So I just want to acknowledge the very hard work that she's done. She's been in the position only since August of last year and has made really an impact on our projects, on our programs, and we're just delighted to have her on board. And then we've also had a retirement, Luanne Hathaway,
has also contributed to many of SERC's initiatives and to our graduate program in the past, where some of those students that she worked with are just graduating now. So I just want to acknowledge those individuals. There's many others, so I'm apologizing now if I've missed anyone, but I want to highlight those two in particular who have been really instrumental in the work that we do through the center.
Well, I want to thank you for coming back on the show. Look forward to checking in with you again next year. Maybe we could schedule that in now. Looking forward to seeing some of the outcomes of what's happening with the Lincoln Living Lab and seeing how the strategic plan's going forward with the ESRC. So thanks a lot for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
It's an honor to be here, and a lot of these initiatives have annual reports, actually, so I can actually read you the annual report for some of these initiatives. No, I won't, but I can definitely give you an update. I look forward to closing out the season next year.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3 and 4 year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. Come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
I want to thank Dr. Marilyn Jolinal for coming into the studio and talking with us about her work at the Environmental Sustainability Research Center and also what she did on her sabbatical. At the beginning of the episode, we noted that RJ was in Toronto, and there's a very good reason for that. That reason is that school's out. So at the end of episode 9, we weren't quite certain what was happening, whether RJ was going to be moving back up to Toronto or if she was going to be able to find herself a job down here where she could continue to work on the show. Unfortunately, she is moved back up to Toronto. And at the end of episode 9, in the eventuality that she did move back up to Toronto, we have recorded a goodbye message, as it were. So we are going to play that now. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to season 2 of the Geo Niagara Radio Show and look forward to bringing you season 3. And at the end of the little snippet from RJ's goodbye, we do talk about how to get in contact with us should you be interested in participating in the Geo Niagara Radio Show, whether as a co-host or a co-producer or an editor and that sort of thing. So I encourage you to tune into that and give us a call if you're interested.
So, Darren, I think this might be my last episode.
That's sad.
It is sad.
I'd like to thank you, though.
Aw, thank you. Yeah.
Because I don't think this show definitely wouldn't have gotten off the ground without you.
Aw. Yeah, maybe
and,
not.
You know, for those who don't know, the Geo Niagara Radio Show started as an internship project through Brock University. Mm-hmm. And Rachel stepped up and answered the bell. And has been a source of inspiration in terms of this radio show. She's helped out drastically, amazingly, because technically she's the engineer, she's the co-producer, and she's also a co-host and an editor. And she does so much for this program. I want to wish you well on your next journeys.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. Those are extremely, extremely kind words. It's been a blessing to be here and a blessing to take a chance on this internship opportunity that it once was and create it into this awesome, I like to call it a hobby these days.
Yeah. Most internships end at the end of the mm-hmm. school year. And thankfully you said, yeah, I want to come back on and mm-hmm. keep it going. And you know, I can't thank you enough for that.
Yeah, geographic awareness is just really important to me, and I have really enjoyed all of the time that we spent here and all the guests we've brought in and getting to know our supervisor, Deb. Thank you to Deb as well. Yeah. It's been an awesome 2 seasons working with you and learning the ropes from you.
So we've done 16 episodes so far.
Wow.
10 for season 2 and 6 for season 1 because we started in January of that mm-hmm. year. So of all the guests that we've had, who has been your favorite What are some of your favorite moments?
Yeah, I cannot just pick one. Gosh. One of them had to be Travis and Tyson talking about remote sensing and drones. UAVs and drones, yeah. Unmanned aerial vehicles, right?
Yeah.
So that was really interesting to learn about. It was a really unique topic we hadn't had in the studio. Talking about Marilyn and on the topic of remote sensing as well is always a pleasure. And even in season two, getting to bring in some friends of mine and having a lot of fun in the studio with my master spotlight this year has been a really, really great time.
Yeah, season two has definitely been the year of the student.
Yes, I think so.
I think.
There you go.
Because we had quite a number of students from both the master's program at Brock.
And the Niagara College program, yeah, of course.
The Niagara College GIS program. And if you want to look back, or if you want to go back, listeners want to go back to the episode that RJ has talked about with Travis and Tyson. That was episode 5 of season 1. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And to Darren, it's been an absolute pleasure being in the studio with you all the time. I couldn't have picked a better partner to get this off the ground with as well. So
I've been
so thankful for this crazy, unique opportunity to start a radio show. Who does that? And it's like the first thing I highlight on my resume these days as relevant experience or volunteer opportunities is I run a radio show, I co-produce it, and I host it, and I'm very, very proud of that. So yeah, thank you for this.
And I appreciate that. If you can include that on a resume and it generates some discussion.
Exactly.
That's all a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So where we are left now is in the need of a co-host,
mm-hmm.
or another co-host or another co-producer or co-engineer.
Or someone who's just willing to step up and learn the ropes of radio, have an interest in geography. You need absolutely zero experience to do this. Darren nor I had any experience starting this.
And sometimes I think it still shows. But in all seriousness, it is a lot of work. Thankfully, we only do a monthly show at this point in time. But
yep.
It's something we would like to grow. So if you have an interest in radio, an interest in geography, an interest in promoting the discipline of geography to the community.
And if you have a voice you want to use to talk with,
yeah,
it's a wonderful platform.
Yeah, get in contact with us,
mm-hmm.
Or get in contact with the radio station at CFBU.
Yeah, they can use all sorts of volunteers for all sorts of topics,
yes.
Not just here at Geo Niagara Radio Show.
Yes. So if you want to get in contact with us with respect to co-hosting, co-producing, shoot us a tweet at GeoNiagara, shoot us an email, geospatialniagara@gmail.com, or send a message to us through Facebook at the GeoNiagara Radio Show, and we'll get back to you. So what we'll probably end up doing is at some point in time, checking in with you. We'll do a call-in interview.
Yeah, we'll do see where RJ's at
and
now.
And see, yeah, where in the world is RJ?
Yay.
It's like, where in the
That's
world
my favorite segment.
It's like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? And we'll see where you are and what adventures that you're on.
Absolutely.
And go from there.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, RJ. I really appreciate it. I'm going to start tearing up now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Darren.
And that is a wrap for season 3. We will see you in September. Have a safe summer.